Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The threat of more sanctions on Russia has some Western businesses preparing for fallout.
While the Russian economy is not that large, nor the Ukrainian one, in the global scheme of things, what it is a massive player in commodities markets, and that's where it will have its effect.
And why the Justice Department is changing its approach to security threats from China. Plus, why lumber traders are feeling a little bored. It's Wednesday, February 23rd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Ukraine has declared a state of emergency and is urging its citizens to leave the country immediately. The shift to war footing comes after the government there received intelligence that a Russian military offensive, including an attack on Kyiv, could come as soon as Wednesday night, according to people familiar with the warning. Speaking at the UN General Assembly today, Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba called on other nations to help Ukraine, in part by imposing sanctions on Russia.
If Russia does not get a severe, swift, and decisive response now, this will mean a total bankruptcy of the international security system and international institutions which are tasked with maintaining the global security order.
The U.S. and its allies have warned that additional sanctions could be levied on Russia. Today, the Biden administration announced plans to impose sanctions on the company constructing the natural gas pipeline known as Nord Stream 2. That decision comes after Germany said it was putting the project on hold indefinitely. Later in the show, we'll talk more about how a range of industries are preparing for potential fallout from economic sanctions. The Justice Department is ending a controversial Trump-era initiative designed to counteract national security threats from China. The decision comes after several failed prosecutions of academics charged with allegedly lying to the U.S. government about their China affiliations. Some have resulted in convictions, but prosecutors dropped others after problems with their evidence. In a briefing with reporters today, Matthew Olson, Assistant Attorney General for National Security, said the DOJ would now pursue only instances where prosecutors perceive clear criminal misconduct with clear connections to national or economic security interests. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is revoking emergency powers he invoked last week, now that police have succeeded in shutting down a weeks-long protest in Ottawa against COVID-19 mandates that had blocked crucial U.S.-Canada border crossings.
After careful consideration, we're ready to confirm that the situation is no longer an emergency. Therefore, the federal government will be ending the use of the Emergencies Act.
Among other things, the emergency powers included instructing banks to freeze accounts belonging to officials who participated in or organized the protests. Our Ottawa Bureau reporter Paul Vieira says that had been controversial.
The government was getting a lot of blowback from opposition politicians and financial crime experts about the broad powers it gave, and that there was a risk that it would harm unaffiliated people. So there was a lot of criticism about this. It appears that government and law enforcement authorities are stepping back a bit.
Meanwhile, authorities are preparing for potential disruptions from similar protests led by truckers and their supporters in the Washington area ahead of President Biden's State of the Union address next week. The Pentagon says it approved the deployment of about 700 National Guard troops to the area to assist with traffic control and other support. Coming up, how some Western businesses may get caught up in sanctions against Russia.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
As the U.S. and its Western allies impose sanctions on Russia and warn that more could be on the way if Moscow takes further military action in Ukraine, many businesses are preparing for possible economic fallout, from big banks to energy companies to steel plants. Many companies are still figuring out just how they might be impacted and how they'll react if the West expands the scope of penalties on Russia. Joining me now with more on this is our London-based reporter, Alistair MacDonald. Hi, Alistair. Thanks for being here.
Hi.
Let's start by talking about some of the industries likely to feel the impact of these sanctions, starting with energy companies, several of which have big investments in Russia. We've seen the price of oil soaring already this week. What are the major concerns of big energy companies right now?
Yeah, so as you point out, actually, this tensions in Ukraine have actually made the oil price soar, so in that sense they actually benefit from it. But you have a lot of the, most of the majors in fact, BP, Shell, ExxonMobil, Total Energy, they all have joint ventures in Russia. And the problem would be if the companies they're in joint ventures with were sanctioned, basically, or if the Russian government took its own action and made it harder for these companies to work there, then that could be quite problematic for the energy giants.
And what are you hearing from them in terms of their strategies for getting around any potential fallout and also preparing for sanctions that may be yet to come from the West?
They're not really talking, to be honest. It's quite hard to get information out of corporates on something like this. I mean, I'm sure when it actually happens, they will have to talk because it would potentially be likely to be, you know, material to their share price. But at the moment, they're staying very much mum. There's very few companies who are actually willing to talk about the effects of this at the moment.
What are some of the potential impacts we might see on big oil companies that they might need to prepare for, even if we don't know exactly how they're doing that?
There's going to be big impacts, but it's depending on the company. The one that's considered most exposed is the British company BP. So JP Morgan, for instance, estimates that around 9% of BP's net asset value is exposed to Russia. And that compares with an average across the sector in Europe of 5%. That 5% is still quite a lot, actually. But obviously, if it's 9%, I'm sure at BP are looking into potential scenarios there. ExxonMobil also has joint venture in Russia, and it's in fact one of the largest ever foreign investments by a company into Russia was from ExxonMobil, and Total has a very, very large investment there, as does Shell in terms of LNG.
Alistair, banks are another big category here, considering the targeted financial sanctions. What is the potential impact on Western banks, and what have you learned about how they're guarding against potential fallout here?
It could be through a lot of things, but chiefly it would be if their clients were sanctioned. That would potentially make it much harder for them to trade. So they would quickly have to cut ties with them if they were, lending or trading with companies in Russia that were sanctioned. And that could be on a variety of different levels. But, you know, even something as simple as if you're a bank and your client is trading oil with a Russian counterparty, then that Russian counterparty has a bank that is then sanctioned, or the counterparty itself is sanctioned, then you as a bank would not be able to deal with them. So that would be one big reason. The other reason, which is more affects the European banks than the US banks, is they have corporate clients there. So they, you know, have local lenders in Russia that will lend money to Russian clients, and that is potentially a problem.
What other industries are likely to be impacted by sanctions from the West, either because they're based in Ukraine or Russia, or because they do business there?
So the thing with Russia is it's actually, despite its size geographically and its population, it's actually a very small economy. It's very small compared to the US. So, and Ukraine obviously is even smaller. So the exposure of Western multinationals to Ukraine and Russia is not massive as a whole. Commodities, it's different. So Russia is a huge commodity player. So if you are in oil, there is a chance that you'll be in Russia. Even though, as I've just said, it's not huge exposures for Western business as a whole, there are interesting companies that are exposed. For instance, is the Danish giant brewer. I know they're not massive so much in the US, but they're huge elsewhere. It's the third biggest global brewer, is Carlsberg. They have three breweries in Ukraine, for instance, and I think seven in Russia itself, and they sell a lot of beer in both of these places. Another one is the ArcelorMittal, which is the largest steel maker outside of China, they have a very large plant in Ukraine. Now, of course, it's not going to be a major part of their earnings, but it's still an asset of theirs, and they still have also corporate responsibility. Obviously, they still have duty of safety for their employees. There's a few car companies as well that have production in Russia. Stellantis, which is the car maker behind Jeep, Dodge and Peugeot brands, it has productions in Russia of some of its brands. So it's a mixed bag. And I think the important thing is that while the Russian economy is not that large, nor the Ukrainian one in the global scheme of things, what it is a massive player in commodities markets. And that's where it will have its effect. It's, you know, a large slice of oil production, and it's a large slice of gas production, and it's a large slice of nickel production and palladium production. And these might sound obscure to some of our listeners, but of course palladium, for instance, is in catalytic converters, so it's very key. And I think Russia's responsible for 40% of palladium output, of which is mainly in one company called Norilsk Nickel. So all these things are really important.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Alistair MacDonald. Alistair, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks very much for your time.
And finally, last year amid supply chain backlogs, the price of lumber shot up to triple its pre-pandemic high. And trading in lumber futures has remained volatile ever since. So far this year, lumber prices have moved so sharply that they've ended up tripping the commodities market's built-in circuit breakers, essentially shutting down trading on most days. That means the trading day is over almost as soon as it begins. So with action at a standstill, where does that leave traders? Our commodities reporter Ryan December looked into it.
Well, so I wrote to one trader who I talked to from time to time to ask him, you know, what is going on? How can you navigate a market when trading is shutting down every day like this, effectively shutting down? And I got an out-of-office reply from him that said, gone fishing. And so he just kind of shut everything down, took a vacation for the first time in a long time, and, you know, just kind of is waiting out the high volatility in the market.
And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.